Hello and welcome to The Fast Podcast, a place where we aim to break down stigmas around mental health one conversation at a time. I'm G Atkinson and each episode I'll be joined by a special guest. We'll tell stories, ask questions and speak openly about the experiences we've had. We're the Fast Movement and together we're fighting against suicidal thoughts. Hello and welcome to the Fast Podcast. Today I'm joined by Kate, and I met Kate a couple of weeks ago at Kate's workshop, Mindfully Botanical, at Moss Studios in Altrincham. I'd never been there before and it was lovely and I absolutely loved the workshop, so I'm very excited for our conversation today. I'll let Kate tell you a little bit more about the workshop, but before we get onto that, the reason that we're having the conversation today is because Kate started talking at the beginning of the workshop about mindfulness and just the importance of being able to switch off and in your day, and you know, taking that time out is really important and quite beneficial, and I massively love things like that. And so yeah, I'm hoping that we have a great conversation. I'm sure we will. So, Kate, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to just introduce yourself and just let us know a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah. So, I'm Kate Moore Youssef. I'm a mum of four kids and I'm now a wellbeing and sort of positivity coach. I hosted the workshop about 10 days ago. And I sort of came up with the idea that I used to work with sort of plants and succulents, and that was more for me just a bit of an escape from my hectic family life. So I sort of was on a bit of a career break, but I sort of still needed something for myself and just really craved a bit of time out and a bit of creativity. And so I started planting lots of different types of succulents and cacti and all various different types of glassware and ceramics, and then sold it, and it was really, really helpful just to bring a little bit of peace and harmony into my very busy family life. So I stopped doing that when I decided I wanted to retrain as a wellbeing and health coach. So I sort of studied for quite a while and I was doing a course and did a couple of other courses, and all my planting sort of pretty much just got put in the garage and wasn't seen for a long time. And due to sort of various different serendipitous situations, I met a lovely girl called Claudine and we decided to do a workshop together. She also did some planting for herself, and we kind of came together and I said I really wanted to bring in the well-being side, purely because it helped me so much when I needed that time out. And I feel, you know, I find a lot of people don't put a value on having a hobby or having that time out. You know, we talk about self-care and self-love, and people might say, well, I'm going to go to the gym, or they watch TV, or for them, what, you know, putting a series of Netflix is their sort of self-care. But actually, just to be able to totally switch off from technology and have that time where they can really think and they can harness their creativity. They might even not know it's there. I mean, I've got a friend who worked in TV for a really long time and has suddenly set up this amazing cake making business in London. And she can't believe what's happened. She can't believe where this has all come from. It's sort of like this inner power that she didn't know she had, and her well-being is much better now. She just can't get over the time that she spends that she would normally sat watching TV or whatever. So it's really amazing when you sort of a bit more mindful and open to these type of things, how much better it can just make you feel. So I decided to do the workshop. We had a great turnout, we sold all the tickets, and we wanted to really hone in on the mindfulness side and the creativity and the positivity that it can bring to your life, to just focus and get in the flow and just enjoy being quiet and being, you know, with this, it's sort of being a bit more at one with nature, working with your hands, just getting in, you know, you just getting into a zone in your head where you can just think and be in that present moment where so many of us are racing everywhere and we're thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow and the next day and, you know, focusing on like bad things that have happened to us in the past. And essentially, we just need our brains, our minds just to slow down and just live in that moment where we can just enjoy that exact moment and just kind of be grateful for having the time that, you know, we have to embrace something like that. So I felt like a lot of the guests there or the attendees really kind of definitely got into that zone. It took a little while, and then once you were all there, it was amazing to see everybody create these fantastic botanical arrangements.
No, I loved it, and I mean I went with my mum and we both came away, and on the journey home we were both saying to each other, I feel a lot more relaxed. And we did actually say, you know, what would we normally be doing on a Monday night? We'd probably be sat watching telly but having a chat, not really watching, you know, or maybe on your phone for a little bit. So it was just really lovely.
Oh, I'm so
I
glad.
Think what you just said before was interesting about your friend who makes the cakes, because I think there is a bit of a stigma behind mindfulness activities and exercises that it's, you know, meditation or saying affirmations or doing your mantras or things like that. But I think what I've learned about it, and I think I love, is that it's just a case of switching off, like you've said, and it's just having that time to just chill. And it might be making cakes or planting plants or there's so many different things.
I think that's it, is it's trying to, like you say, mindfulness, a lot of people will straight away switch off and they think it is, you know, sitting there and meditating and thinking about rivers and whatever. And yes, that can be really helpful. But, you know, to bring it in sort of a really practical day-to-day life, it can be anything from just going for a walk and just noticing your surroundings. It could be sat there, you know, making a cup of tea and instead of checking your phone and your Instagram while you're making a tea, just watching how the tea bag floats to the top and, you know, watching the steam and, you know, just something really small like that, just to bring you in that present moment. And so, what, you know, even if it's, you know, sitting in traffic and you just want to turn off the radio for a few minutes and just give yourself that time to reflect on your day and just kind of notice how you're feeling, you know, whether you're anxious or whether you're quite calm or happy, if you've had a good day, a bad day, you've had a good conversation with someone. So it is really easy just to harness it into your life. But I think, you know, if you're not that type of person and, you know, the whole well-being thing is not really for you, you do automatically switch off. So it is nice to be able to bring a bit more of a practical element to it.
Definitely. And so what was it that, how did you discover that was your exercise that you enjoyed doing? Did you try like different things, or was
it was bizarre. Yeah, literally. Okay. I mean, I'm a really big fan of sort of being out in nature. So that for me is always a thing. I always know that if I'm out on a walk, and especially if I'm in like a woods or by a beach or anything like that, I know that I'm at my most calm. So if anything is going down, I'll be like, right, I need to go for a walk. I need to go and sort of just find some greenery. And the succulent planting thing was just, I can only say it was like some form of epiphany in the middle of the night, because I'd never really thought about it before. I must have seen some pictures online and kind of thought, oh, okay, that's easy enough. I'm relatively resourceful. So the next morning I kind of Googled, you know, some suppliers, went to my local garden centre, bought some compost stones, whatever I needed, and just literally messed around. So I've got pictures of my initial ones, and they did kind of look like a four-year-old had done it. You know, my
that's part of it though, isn't it? That it doesn't matter what it looks like at the end of it.
Yeah, it was. And what was great was it was all self-taught. So I really enjoyed that process of trying and failing, and then taking lots of pictures and noticing the improvement. And it was actually also a very tangible way of, you know, sometimes you feel like you're not really ever improving or you're not evolving and life's always the same. And if you've got that mindset of negativity, and you know, this was a great way of me seeing, okay, I've taught myself a new skill and I am improving. And that really kind of added to it. And then as I got better and better, it was an amazing confidence lift as well. And I just loved it for myself. I'd put on music, I'd listen to podcasts. my kids knew that when I was in my little planting room, not to bother me. But even if they did, they sort of sit and talk to me while I was doing it. So I felt like I was giving them a really good example that, you know, first of all, you know, whatever you want, you can try. You know, no one says you can't do anything. And just to teach yourself something, you know, no one's beyond being taught or learning a new skill, no matter how old you are.
And I think as well, some people think that, you know, oh, I'm not creative, or oh, I'm not gifted at that. And like you've just said, then you are able to teach yourself a certain skill. And I bet it's quite nice to, like you said, you've seen the process of that. Like, that's the thing with a hobby. It's not something that you have to achieve X, Y, and Z. It's just your own, on your own terms.
It was, the pressure was off because I wasn't going, right, this is going to be my new business and I've got to make X, Y, you know, money by this day. It was a hobby. Then I thought, okay, I can make a little bit of money. People were asking to make certain things, and I was doing workshops, and I was doing artisan fairs and you know, doing sort of like selling days at different places. And I started making, you know, a nice little bit of money from it, just because it kind of just took off really organically. So, yeah, I think it was because the pressure was off. But also, anyone can pick up a new hobby, because social media, the internet, I mean, the amount of books that you can find on Amazon, I didn't even know you could find such specific books about succulents. And so, yeah, you kind of, anything, if you want, you know, you fancy something, you just go online, go on Instagram.
YouTube videos.
YouTube, exactly.
It's amazing.
So, yeah, who needs a degree when you've got YouTube?
That's so true, honestly. The amount of times I say in the office that if I did not have access to YouTube, I would not be able to produce half the work that I do, but... you know, I love it, and I love learning new skills. But, and I think, well, especially for me, because my job's a lot of it, well, 100% of it pretty much is online, and I'm on my laptop. If I don't go for a walk in the week after work for a week or something, I'll notice myself feeling a bit negative and a bit restless and a bit agitated. And it's often if I go on my phone a bit more than I should and things like that. So I, you know, it's either going for a walk or reading a book for a little bit. Yeah. So I think it's really...
That's really good that you're mindful of that, because a lot of people won't make those connections and they won't know why they're feeling like that. And they won't make the connections. So the fact that you know that you can do those things to make yourself feel better is fantastic, because you just... You know, you can say, someone will say they're feeling like that, and then I'll say, well, when was the last time you went for a walk? And they go, oh, I don't walk. And it's like, okay, well, why don't you try that? Or try, you know, not going on your phone after sort of 7 o'clock in the evening, and, you know, trying something else. And just such small sort of incremental changes, just like that, just something small to break the habit can really make a difference.
So when was it that you got into coaching? Did it kind of align at the same time as when you started doing your planting, or was it something that you'd done before?
I think it was my natural interest in sort of health and well-being and healthy eating, and just always had an interest in it. And, you know, I'd try and bring it into my family and my kids and hope that I was setting a good example. And that was when I decided I didn't want to go back to my previous career, which was PR, public relations. And I thought, right, okay, I've had my kids and I've stayed at home, and I really feel like definitely not at the end of my career journey. I feel like I want to start afresh. And my former boss, who I worked with for a really long time, she decided that she was going to become a health coach a while ago. And we'd always had quite a lot in common, and we'd always sort of like have the sort of same mindsets and the same similarities about things that we enjoyed doing. And I thought, oh, that sounds really interesting. So we sort of had a chat about it, and I decided I was going to kind of do some retraining, and I qualified as a health coach. And slowly but surely, I've sort of done a few different courses. And throughout my journey of requalifying and kind of really seeing where my niche lies, where my passion and interest lie to help people, it's definitely been more about sort of the mental health side and the well-being, and definitely looking after your body and eating well and exercising has such a huge impact on mental health. So I really sort of like to focus on how you look after your body, that has that impact on your mental well-being. So I try and bring that into my family with my kids and how they eat. And I mean, much to their dismay, I'm like, you know, that mum that doesn't really like sugary foods and cooks everything from scratch for them. And I'm not militant, because it'd be too difficult. But I really try and just sort of set that example, so they always know that, you know, choosing the healthier option is better. But, you know, it's difficult to be too militant with them. So I hope as they get older, they'll understand that looking after themselves is really important for their mental health.
So I know this might sound like a silly question, but because I know, you know, eating healthily is a great thing and a positive thing, but how come it does have a negative effect on you if you don't eat healthily? Is there kind of an explanation for that, or
well, there's a massive connection between your gut health and your mind, and then they call it the gut brain axis. So it's actually like it's a physical connection between your gut going right up to your brain. And there's a lot of evidence and studies now coming out that are supporting that if you have a healthy gut, you're much likely to have a healthy mind. And so, you know, there's links between depression and what you eat and being, I'm not saying that that is the cause of depression, but it can really help lift the symptoms. So, you know, processed food, sugar, salt, lots of bad fats, anything like that can have a negative impact. So, I mean, I'm sure you've probably gone somewhere and eaten, you know, some really dodgy processed food and probably felt really sluggish and a bit rubbish afterwards. And it doesn't kind of revitalize you. Whereas if you know, prepare yourself a really good fresh meal, and you're going to feel energized, you're going to feel full of vitality, you're going to feel like you can sort of take on the world. And people just don't make that connection often enough. You know, if you're drinking 5 cans of Diet Coke a day and loads of coffee and then sort of having you know, a microwave meal, that is not going to make you feel mentally strong. So you're always going to be on the back foot because of that. And then on top of it, you're, you know, exercising, that increases your endorphins and dopamine and all of that in your mind and your brain. So it is, for me, you know, teaching my children from a young age that if they're going to sit there and eat bags of crisps and biscuits, and I see it with my own eyes, you know, I see when they've come back from a birthday party or they've been out with a grandparent and they've had some, you know, really sugary food, they'll come back and they're agitated, they're hyperactive, they're, you know, aggressive and all these things. And it shows so much more in kids. Like, adults kind of learn how to kind of control it, but it's like there, been sort of right in front of you with children. And afterwards, when the kids have calmed down and I've sort of tried to give them something or I've taken them on a walk just to kind of burn it off, I say to them, did you notice your behavior? You know, did you notice the aggression? Did you notice that you were being horrible or naughty or mean? And they'll say yes. And then I'll say, well, what did you eat? And they say, well, I had this and that. So it is very much there. So it just kind of manifests slightly differently in adults.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So sort of eating lots of food that makes your brain happy, you know, something like fermented food, where that's lots of kimchi and sauerkraut, miso soup, anything like that, really sort of increases the good bacteria in your gut and the microbiome. So there's a lot more evidence. People used to poo-poo it about 5 years ago, and now, you know, doctors are really recognizing, psychiatrists are recognizing, psychologists are noticing the difference between, you know, promoting a healthy lifestyle, healthy eating, you know, good exercise practice with, you know, mental health conditions. And there's a lot of people out there who manage their mental health conditions purely from a lifestyle point of view. So they know if they don't run 3 or 4 times a week, they can feel the black cloud lift, you know, coming over. They can feel the anxiety building. You know, I know from myself, who I don't sort of suffer too badly with any sort of mental health conditions, but I do notice that I'm sort of not in a great mood or have, you know, sort of low level anxiety if I've not been out and walked or done some exercise. So yeah, it is. It's really being mindful and noticing if, you know, especially if you work in an office and you start the day on a coffee and then you don't eat until whatever time, you know, your blood sugar levels, you can feel the palpitations, and then you sort of have like a really sugary pastry, and then your sort of blood sugar levels soar again, and then you come crashing back down. It's like a roller coaster throughout the day. But if you start the day really well and like some good breakfast, and you don't really feel the need to snack on unhealthy food, and then you sort of takes you into lunch and you have another good lunch and it keeps you going, you don't have that sluggish kind of 2-3 o'clock, oh, when's the day ending? And you kind of get to the end of the day and you think, oh, you know what, I've still got energy, why don't I go for a run after work? So it's this sort of vicious cycle that you can keep on top of, or you can just fall into the sort of the depths of, and you kind of come out and you just think you're in a cycle and you don't know how to break it.
And I suppose as well, if it becomes part of your routine that you're doing, you know, unhealthy eating, you've not got energy in you throughout the day, and if you're repeating that, and like I know you said before that, you know, adults kind of learn to deal with that, and so I suppose if you get to the point where you've been doing that for X amount of time and you're almost not recognising in yourself how much of a negative effect that is having on you.
It becomes part of your daily routine just to be that person that doesn't have energy, that wakes up every morning exhausted, you're in a bad mood, you know, you could be one of those people that just emits like negativity, you know, they call them sort of like mood hoovers. So you're just one of those people that just sends negative vibes. And or you can be that type of person that it like walks into a room and you're just like this ray of kind of positivity. So you definitely have a lot more control over how you feel on a day-to-day basis, purely by the choices that you make with regards to your lifestyle.
I find that fascinating. I think it's because, and especially going back to the routine side of things, because I suppose once you do find that simple mindfulness exercise, whether it is going for a walk or just taking yourself away from your phone for a little bit, and I think the more people that are in this cycle that's not necessarily good for their mental health, as soon as they start to break away from that and do these slight little exercises and putting themselves into a bit more of a positive mindset and allowing that to become part of the daily routines, and hopefully that's when people will see the benefit and think, you know what, this little simple thing, whether it is like you mentioned before, watching your tea bag and your tea and just being switched off from everything else about what's going on in your brain, the more people allow themselves to do that, hopefully the more that they'll just continue to be in that positive
and
mindset.
It's also thinking about your habits and being mindful about habits, and habits are really hard to break. And you know, and if you've been in that same habit, you know, every day for 15, 20 years, that is seriously not an easy thing to break. So it's trying to override bad habits with a few better ones, and then slowly have a few good habits, and those slightly less good, you know, the negative habits kind of fall by the wayside a little bit. So it's introducing those new habits and slowly as well, and not putting too much pressure on yourself. And you can't go from, you know, 0 to 100 in like 3 days. So, you know, if you know that there's certain things that trigger mental health issues, or not feeling great, or feeling sluggish, or your energy being sapped. And another thing, you know, is definitely, you know, who you choose to be around. And, you know, it could just literally, you could have a very low energy purely because the people that you're hanging around with are sapping that from you. And you know, really assessing who you decide to spend your precious time with, because everyone's time nowadays is precious. You know, where everyone's rushing around and, you know, it just seems like people are busier than ever. And when you do have time to relax and enjoy, you want to be around people that make you feel good and people that kind of uplift you, that encourage you to have good habits. And you don't want to be around people that want to bring you down or try and convince you to do the bad habits that are kind of, you know, making you not feel great. So also being mindful of that as well. And that's something that I feel that a lot of people don't take into consideration enough, how someone else can really sap you and bring you down.
Because I think as well, if you surround yourself with people that are negative, no matter how hard you try to not let that negative energy come onto you, it's inevitable that that's, because you're going to have negative thoughts, or even if it's, you know, somebody might have annoyed you, and it's every time you see them, it kind of brings that emotion back to you. I think it is very important to know that you can remove yourself from that person if you know, sometimes it might not be the option that you can, but a lot of the time, like you said, time's precious, and I think it's so important to focus on yourself. And that's like what I love about the well-being side of things, that it's a lot of it is about you as a person, and you know, put yourself first in mental health side of things, and you have to spend time on yourself.
Definitely. And I think as you get older, and you know, then you become a parent, and you definitely become like the more of the bottom of the pecking order, especially with kids. But if you are a parent, you have to be the best version of yourself to bring up the best version of your children as well. So it is, you know, stepping back and saying, right, I need to look after myself so I can you know, bring the best rest for my family and into the house. So it is really kind of taking stock of things like that, and you know, especially your lifestyle and you know, your positivity, because it is really easy to kind of just complain a lot.
And that as well, being a parent, it's like you are a role model to your children, so you almost want to be the best version of yourself, because at the end of the day, it's the lessons that you're teaching them is ultimately going to create the person that they're going to grow up to be.
100%. And you want them to be positive thinking kids, and you don't want them to be surrounded by this sort of negative energy, or oh, I'm so tired, or I've got no energy, or oh, we're not doing that walk today. You know, you want them to be go-getters and happy, and for them to learn that they can choose positive thoughts. And it's very easy to sort of sink into the negativity, but they can choose to always focus on the positive, and to stop their minds or their brains from them going into like a default negative mode. And it is really hard to do that. You know, the minute someone asks you, how are you? It's really easy to say, oh my God, I've not stopped. I'm so tired. I slept really badly last night. Or, you know, you can go into a bit of a tirade of complaints, or you can sort of stop yourself, think before you speak, because you think that that's going to have an impact on that person. They're going to then feel a bit deflated, because if you're, or, and then you can sort of flip it and go, I'm fine, I'm good. You know, obviously if you're not fine and you do need to talk, that's really important. But if you're just so used to being on a default mode of thinking about negativity, then again, it becomes another habit.
I think as well, if somebody, you know, a lot of times I've used to say things like, oh, I'm so busy, I'm always busy. And then you know, if I actually sat back and thought, I'd be like, no, I'm probably not that busy. But because I had in my head, like, you know, I'd always have to be doing something and be doing things. And I never kind of gave myself that space just to relax and just do nothing. I think a lot of people almost think that if you're always busy, then it's people will respect you a bit more.
It's like that badge of honor, isn't it? Of, especially when I think when you're a woman, that you do feel like you've got to cram in as much as you can in a day.
Definitely.
And then you feel guilty for just chilling and not doing anything, or you feel like you need to kind of just unwind. And it's like relearning that being, you know, having a bit of time in the day, a bit of space, is really, really good. And making sure that you're kind of diarising that. If you can't do it on a day-to-day thing, you go, right, okay, I'm not going to do anything on Monday or Tuesday, but Wednesday I'm going to give myself 2 or 3 hours in the evening or the afternoon or the morning or whatever it is, and go for that walk, or go for a bath, or go for a yoga class, and do that with no guilt whatsoever, because you are literally recharging your batteries, and you know, you can't run on empty forever. So if it's constant every week and you're thinking about it and you're being mindful about, okay, when am I going to recharge, when am I going to have that time to myself, then it just becomes part and parcel of your life, your lifestyle.
Definitely. And not letting it get 4 or 5 months down the line and you've not given yourself that time. So I know that you've worked with children before, teaching them about, is it, you've taught them about fruit and veg and food and things like that. How was that?
So it was great. I went and did a few sessions in some schools and nurseries, and it was just really just to kind of see where kids were at with regards to understanding about healthy eating. And again, making them realise that the connection between eating fresh food and vegetables and fruit can have an impact on how they feel. So it's not just good for them, for their teeth not to eat sugar. It can make their bones strong and make their brain healthy and make them feel happier. So it was really great. I mean, the kids were so receptive and interested, and I had really brilliant feedback from parents, afterwards saying to me, oh my God, they asked for 3 different types of vegetables, teaching them about the variety and eating lots of different colours. And, they touch on it at school, but, especially if they're in a state school, the teachers have so much to cram in. They have so many different things that they've got to, do from a... their structure of the day, that they can sort of only focus on something like that once or twice a month. So I just felt it was great just to go in and see what the kids thought. And yeah, they loved it, they absorbed it, they remembered it, and they knew so much more than I thought they would as well. So it was really great.
And I bet as well doing it in a bit of a kind of fun, engaging way makes children more excited about it, I wish they did it for adults as well, got people a little bit more excited about fruit and veg, because I remember going to uni and a majority of us just ate beige food because we didn't really know how to cook, and with fresh food and cook from scratch and things. And I personally loved learning all about that when I was able to cook for myself, but it's a bit of a foreign thing at first when you've not done it before, and it's quite a rewarding thing at the end of it once you've
it's definitely a thing that children should be taught from a really young age, how to cook, how they can bring in lots of fruit and veg into their diet, why eating more whole grains and plant-based food, anything like that, they have to empower them with the knowledge and the tools that they can go to uni and they can live on their own for the first time, and they don't have to rely on beige food because
microwavable pizzas and bizarre things like that.
They don't need that. I mean, it's so easy. You can go to any budget supermarket and buy healthy ingredients for not very much money. And I think it just needs to be part and parcel of the curriculum from a really young age, because my son is nearly 14 and he's only touched on a little bit of cooking. So thankfully he actually has just a genuine interest in cooking and he enjoys it. Maybe he's because he's sort of seen me at home and he sees that I've got an interest, and it's just, I'm sort of part of the kitchen, basically always chopping. But, if you don't have that at home, it really needs to come from school, because otherwise we're just raising another generation of, obese, unhealthy people that will eventually have mental health problems as well. So it's not just the obesity side, it's the mental health side. So I definitely think, from a government point of view, they need to be on it. And I think they're slowly, but I think it's a very slow drip feed effect.
I think you're right in the sense that you have to get taught it from a young age, because it gets to a point where, it's almost not too late, but if you're taught that from a younger age, it's almost like you're more inclined to experiment a bit more with cooking when you get a bit older and, learn yourself. And it probably comes from certain parts. I was definitely like it at uni as well, but laziness with the fact that it's so easy to go and buy these processed foods and these microwavable meals and things. And but learning how to cook certain meals, it's fun and it's enjoyable. So,
and I think also, like, going back to the university thing, that I've got sort of several nieces now who are at uni. And they say that, the mental health crisis is big at university. And I said, well, what are you guys eating? And she'd have say, oh, pizza, lots of pasta, jacket potatoes, which is fine, here and there. But if that is literally your staple diet and you're not getting a lot of variety and different colours and eating lots of fresh food, that is eventually, as a cumulative effect, going to have an impact on how you feel, and you are going to feel sluggish and sort of low in energy and probably a bit low sort of mentally as well. So they need to be on it with that, teaching students how to cook. And I think it is getting there. I know there's an amazing guy. He's got an Instagram as the Doctor's Kitchen, and I've forgotten, I think Rupee someone, but he definitely focuses, he's a doctor, but he's also really, really into nutrition, and he teaches, does workshops for university students. And I think that definitely should be on the agenda with a lot of the student unions, kind of just helping, you know, teach them. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, it's a bit of a sad thing to admit, but I'd come home from school and college and there'd be a programme called Ready, Steady, Cook. I don't know,
No, I do remember it. I do remember it.
And I mean, I always honed in on like cookery programmes. That was just always my thing. But this was the best because they'd give you like 5 ingredients and you'd have to create something. And that is literally how I cook now. You know, I'll open my fridge and go, right, I've got what dregs of vegetables have I got at the bottom, open my tins, open this, and you know, just find things. And it's like that skill of just being able to throw together something relatively quickly, you know, cheap ingredients, fresh food. And I feel like, yes, it is probably quite an innate skill that you either really enjoy cooking or you just don't. But for people to understand that it doesn't have to be, you know, like a gourmet meal, it doesn't have to be from a recipe book, and it can just be something really simple, really fresh, and it can be done in sort of 5 or 10 minutes.
I always say that about cooking, how you can just kind of throw different bits and bobs in and it's fine, but when it comes to baking...
Yeah, no, I can't, I'm not a baker.
I'm not a baker.
No.
It's when it's got you, as soon as it starts telling you how much you've got to measure out and stuff, I'm like, I'm out. I can't do this.
Yeah. I think it is definitely a different mentality, because it is, I have a more throw everything in, yeah, and add some bits and bobs and spices. And then all my friends kind of know that's how I cook. Whereas baking, every time I've made a cake, it's never worked out, because I kind of can't, you know, like you said, the recipe.
It's a lot more technical, isn't it? So, I've got a few friends who are really into their baking, and you know, they try different things, especially one of the girls that I work with, she's bringing in random different things she's made every week, but that's her way of relaxing, yeah. Like when with the kids, her kids as well, she says, like, you know, it's my way of chilling out.
Definitely.
Just to bake.
Yeah,
I think it would be my way of getting myself all
me
worked
too.
Up and stressed.
Totally. Whereas I happily will cook and chop and fry and kind of get into my little zone. And I think it's definitely where one of my mindful activities is cooking, because I really find that relaxing. So I think I'm lucky that I enjoy that, whereas some people get really sort of frantic and frazzled by the thought of having to cook, where, you know, and then for me, you know, if I'm cooking healthy food and people are eating it, that makes me happy as well.
That's lovely. So what's the next step on your journey, this lovely mindfulness and coaching journey? What's your next steps?
Well, I've just been accepted to do a master's next year in September in positive psychology and wellbeing.
Amazing.
So I'm starting that in September at John Moores in Liverpool. So that was something that I have been thinking about for a really long time, and then found the course that pretty much ticked every single box that I wanted to learn more about and explore more. And it just so happens to be in Liverpool, which is not too far away. So I'm really excited. I'm doing that part-time over 2 years, and that taps a lot more into sort of like the impact, and I guess the more of the neuroscience side of, you know, how important sort of mindfulness, meditation, looking after yourself, that self-care can be from a scientific point of view, and sort of showing how your brain can change, and how you can, I mean, they call it neuroplasticity, and how you can change your brain and the neural pathways, and how, you know, nothing stays the same, and if you want to change, you can always change, you can adopt new practices. So yes, I'll be doing some coaching on the side, doing some workshops and working sort of one-to-one, and hopefully doing some speaking events, and I'll be studying, and I also have my family as well. So I'm trying to heed my own advice, keep a bit of time for self-care, because I really don't want this course that I'm so looking forward to, I'm so proud that I've been accepted, to actually be my downfall. So I want to make sure that I'm kind of got balance. So for me, definitely starting from September is really acknowledging that things are going to be a bit full on, I've got, you know, different kids starting different schools as well, so I really need to kind of keep in check that balance, so I'm not kind of a frazzled mess and not
a lot of things to juggle, but yeah, it's like
I need to practice what I preach, definitely.
That sounds really interesting. I'm reading the book at the moment by Ruby Wax, The Sane New World.
Yeah, I really want to read that.
But for me to, because I listened to her podcast with Fern Cotton that she'd done on Happy Place.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I've got to get a book.
And she got she did like a master's at Oxford or something, didn't she?
Yeah.
She went back and studied.
But she talks a lot about how, you know, your thoughts can change and you can change the way that your brain thinks and all this. I mean, she goes into a lot of detail about the different parts of your brain and stuff, which was, for me, knowledge that I found hard to remember, so I won't even try and go there. But I found that really interesting, that because especially for her, she was coming from a place where she, you know, she'd felt certain things and for, you know, over 30 years, but she was able through mindfulness exercises and things to change it. And that really interested me, that, you know, it's never that, you know, you can't label yourself as like, oh, I'm just a negative person, or I'm just a an angry person, etc., etc. You can change them emotions, so
totally.
I found that really interesting.
Yeah, because people are so quick to label themselves and pigeonhole themselves, and I don't do that. That's not me. I'm not a runner. I'm not a spiritual person. And that's it. And they kind of like put themselves in that box, and then that's it. And then they kind of live their life in this very sort of limited way. And they have got so much access to helping themselves and healing themselves, and knowing that they can change their patterns of thoughts and the way they think. And so, yeah, so I'm really looking forward to being able to learn a lot more about that.
I find that all that stuff is very interesting, and I bet, you know, to go and learn more about it on that level, gosh, I bet that's just going to be fascinating.
I'll come back and I'll tell you all what I'm learning. I'm hoping it's all going to stay in.
Well, I love that. I remember reading a book once, and it was, I think it was called Happiness by Darren Brown. I only read a little bit of it because it got a bit too much for me, but it was about how you're only the story that you tell yourself.
Yeah.
And I, again, that, very like much. You said, picking up on what you said before, it's, you know, if you tell yourself something over and over again, or you create this story in your head based on past events, you're just going to carry that forward. And, you know, you are creating your own story. You're allowed to change how you are.
Well, that's, he comes from the NLP school of thought, which sort of did a practitioner course on that. So it's neuro-linguistic programming. And he very much works on that kind of basis, where you are not your story, and you are not your past, and you are not your future. And yeah, very much like that is reframing things and changing the way you talk about yourself and what's happened to you in the past. And, you know, you can always sort of create a bit of a victim about yourself. And you can obviously, you know, if terrible things have happened to you and you've suffered, and, you know, you don't want to take that away from someone, but essentially people need to move on. And, you know, if you want to embrace life to the fullest and you want to have, you know, happiness and joy again, then you need to sort of be able to have to step away from that story that you are, you know, clinging on to and holding on to. And, you know, I've done a lot of work for myself on things like that, and it's not easy, but once you realize, it's so freeing. It's like you kind of step away from being the person that you think you are, or you should be, or what people expect of you, and you've kind of gone, realize how amazing opportunities there are, and all of a sudden these opportunities come up because you've opened your mind in a different way. But yeah, it's really easy to kind of close yourself in and kind of live a life of fear. And
it's almost like putting yourself in this box. And for example, if an opportunity comes that you think, you know, oh no, I can't do that because I've not got the skills, or I've not done this, I've not done that, then as soon as you kind of start thinking a different way and not being the story you tell yourself,
totally,
you're able to then say yes to things.
Yeah.
And just
I mean, if I thought 2 or 3 years ago I was gonna apply for a master's, Whereas I always told myself, oh, I'm not an academic, you know, I couldn't wait to finish uni and never hand another dissertation in ever again. I mean, I still used to get like nightmares where I'd wake up in like cold sweat that I'd not handed my dissertation in. And, you know, the fact that I've decided to go back to uni and, you know, start all that all over again. And, you know, a few years ago, there was no way. So, yeah, I feel like I've kind of come quite a long way in my journey as well.
Well, thank you very much for chatting. I mean, I could literally chat to you all day. I love this, and it's been really great. And the main takeaway from today, well, I mean, there's lots of takeaways, but I think it's just like if anybody's listening that's not necessarily giving themselves that time to go and do certain mindfulness exercises, just, you know, get out there and try different things. Is there any kind of advice you would give to people to be able to find them certain things? Like, I know, you know, for example, for you, it's been with like your plants and you know, some things might be going for a walk, but is there any kind of advice you'd give to people that were on the pathway of finding their hobby or?
Yeah, I mean, I think intrinsically people know what, you know, is their jam. So whether it's music and it's cooking or nature or exercise, or you know what you're naturally drawn to, but I think life and society can sort of quash that and put, like, you know, say, well, you're not going to be good at that, or and you've got this thing in your head that says, you know, no, don't try that, you'd never be able to do that, you'd never be able to achieve that. So you sort of push. So if you sort of just maybe start reading different things, you know, open your mind to pick up a new magazine that you wouldn't normally read. I guess if you see workshops, there's so many different workshops, you know, if you go online and you find whatever you want. And there's, you know, especially in Manchester, there's so much going on. Just go online and see something, try it. And what's the worst that can happen? You've spent a few pounds on a workshop that wasn't quite for you, but it might lead you to something else. So I would definitely say just open your mind and have fun. Definitely have fun, because I don't think enough of us have fun and put fun at like a priority. So just, you know, stop being serious. And, you know, if you want to become a circus juggler and you want that to be your hobby,
go
online. Yeah, literally, you'll find something in Manchester, you'll find something locally. So no matter how ridiculous it is that you think it is, just, you know, don't have to tell anyone either. So, you know, a lot of these, my sort of hobbies that I, especially with the planting, I didn't tell anyone for ages because I thought I'd be ridiculed. And that was my self-talk, you know, almost saying to me, this is ridiculous, what are you doing?
That's crazy, isn't
but
it?
But it is ridiculous. Yeah. And then when I sort of put it out there and I put it on social media, my friends were so supportive and I had such lovely feedback. So I think, you know, if you just want to test the water, don't tell anyone, and, you know, you haven't got anyone to prove anything to, and just go and have a bit of fun and enjoy, because that's really what life is about. You know, nothing more, nothing less.
I love that. Go and have fun, guys. Yeah. And don't take everything too seriously.
Absolutely.
So one last thing I'd love to ask, I've asked everybody as the little ending to the podcast, but is, what's your mantra? If there's one thing that you live by each day, what's your mantra?
Oh my God. Knives dump me. I think just try and find positivity in everything you do, because it is really easy to not see that. And be grateful, gratitude. Oh my God, literally every day find something to be grateful for. And, you know, whether that is just that ray of sunshine on your face just before you walk into the office, or you have, you know, you've got kids and you kind of spend a bit of time with them in the evening, putting them to bed, you know, obviously sometimes that's not that fun, but, you know, anything that you feel that has kind of made you smile that day or lifted your spirits, whether you've had a great conversation with a friend or anything, but if you find some two or three things every day to be grateful for, then you wake up the next morning and you kind of look for those things. So yeah, so I'd say positivity and gratitude.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the Fast Podcast today. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.